You know that sound, don't you? That's the sound of maybe your lawnmower, or maybe it's the neighbor's lawnmower at 7 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. Larry Beeler here. Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. And guess what? We're going to talk lawn care with you today with Doug Soldat, professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison. Of course, he has a PhD in horticulture, specializes in turf grass, urban soils, nutrient management, water resources, soil testing, landscape irrigation. Well, we can talk about a lot of things with Doug. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions as we move along today. Maybe you've got a question about organic fertilizers or herbicides, maybe about reseeding, what kinds of lawn problems. Did you have last year you want to talk about? Give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Doug Soldat, welcome back. Good
Thanks,
to have you.
Larry. Yeah. Great to be back.
Good to have you with us.
Good to see the spring coming.
Yeah, pretty harsh winter in many respects. What kinds of problems can that cause to a lawn?
You know, not too many. I guess we've had probably more snow than we've had for a while. So I think people may be noticing was probably snow mold in their lawn. It's a fungus that causes these brown patches, but it's just cosmetic. As soon as the soil warms up, that grass will grow right through it.
Yeah. So no.
No lasting damage.
No need to do anything about it. Just wait.
Just wait. Yeah.
Okay.
Just wait.
Michelle in Milwaukee has a question for you already. So let's go there. Hi, Michelle.
Yeah. I have two dogs, and they tend to rip apart the yard. And I'm not quite sure what the best grass to use so that it's a little bit sturdier. And because my German Shepherd loves to just run and dig and. And we're trying to fix it, but it's been very challenging because we're not finding a grass that's tough enough to withstand them.
Yeah, that's a pretty common issue too. And our best recommendation for situations like that is a grass called tall fescue. It's a little bit stiffer leaf blade, a little bit wider. Some people don't like it. They think it's a weed when it's in their lawn, but it's the grass that I recommend for dog parks. It's a little bit more salt tolerant, so even if you have the urine spots, it can be a little more resistant to those, and it can totally resist the wear and tear better than the other grasses. Now, it's also a good quick establisher. You put the seed down and it'll germinate pretty quickly, so that's another good reason to use it.
Yeah. Will it work? Do you have a shady lawn, or is it, Michelle, or is it?
Yeah, it's pretty sunny. And they also, last year, put a lot of sand down to level a pool for the children.
Okay.
And we took it down, but we still have sand now that we have there. Will it grow with the sand, or do we just need to add topsoil?
It should grow through the sand and find the soil beneath it. Tall fescue's got really thick, deep roots that will do. It's one of the more water drought tolerant grasses too. So I think give tall fescue a try, and that should probably be your solution to that issue.
Yeah, there you go, Michelle. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. Give a call with your lawn question or comment. Brett in Janesville, it's your turn. Hi, Brett.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Hey, I just had a quick question about what to do when your lawn's soil bed isn't entirely level. And I don't mean it's not like on a gradient or anything like that, but there's high spots and low spots. Some areas are 3 or 4 inches higher, and there's some large divots. Like recessions that are 3 or 4 inches deep, and it's just not an even lawn bed. And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, that's a common complaint that people have with their lawns over time. They may get bumpy or you have uneven areas. I mean, the best way to do it is to kill the lawn and regrade it completely if you're looking for a nice flat surface. But most people don't want to go through the all the trouble of doing that. So the next best recommendation we have is to top dress a material on top. So you can use topsoil. You can use compost. You throw that over the low spots and you rake it. And you're not going to get 3 inches of elevation right away, but if you put down a quarter inch, half inch each time you do it, after 3 or 4 years, you'll notice that those low spots start to come back up to grade. So I think I would give that a shot. But if you're in the mood for a lot of work, you can kill it and start over.
Yeah. I did that once many years back.
I did that once. That's there's your indicator. Never
That's
again.
That's all it took.
Yeah.
Oh, one time.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Hugh in Muscadet, your turn. Hi, Hugh.
Hello. Say, my question is, I built a new house and I have a lot of, it's not really blow sand, but it's sand. And I was wondering if there was a special seed so that I wouldn't have to bring in lots and lots of black dirt.
Right. Yeah, good question. Sand can be difficult primarily because of the establishment period. So when you're growing in a new lawn from seed, you have to keep that seed bed moist as much as possible. And so that can be a challenge depending on the weather and the rain. But after that, if you have a grass called fine fescue, fine fescue is really a collection of several closely related species. Creeping red fescue, chewings fescue, hard fescue, any of those except for tall fescue. Don't plant tall fescue. Those will do great in sands, but you might have a bit of a trouble getting them established if you don't have, a watering system or a way to keep them moist during that germination. But they love sand. Those grasses do well in sandy areas.
So you'd be watering that area after you seed it every day?
Or? Yeah, multiple times a day. You don't need deep watering, but you do need to keep that surface wet. So in the morning, maybe at lunchtime if you can do it, and then again in the evening. And sands are just even more susceptible to drying out. And when you dry out those seeds, they'll just die, and you won't have anything to fill in that area.
There you go, Hugh. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Cindy in Swamigo, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I live in an area where it's really shady. It's kind of swampy around that area. And consequently, in my backyard, all I really have growing there is moss. Now, I'm wondering if there's any kind of grass that could grow there and what, if anything, I can do to try to get a lawn established.
Yeah, this is the most challenging place to grow grass is shady and wet. And there are two grasses that we recommend over the others that are they're rare because they only do well in these kind of shady wet spots, and they're weedy in other areas. And so the first one is the best recommendation is Sapina bluegrass. Sapina is Supina. It's very hard to find. You're not going to find it in any shelf. You're going to have to buy it online. And there's probably multiple retailers. This isn't an endorsement. This is just where I know you can get it right now. It's called seedsuperstore.com. And they'll have this Sapina bluegrass. It's really, really expensive, unfortunately, like $50 a pound. But it will grow in shady, wet spots. Now,
well, wait a minute. How far does a pound go?
A pound is only going to cover maybe 1,000 square feet.
All right. That's still for a lawn. That's a pretty good area.
It's decent. So the other grass, the second best one, is more economical. It's called rough bluegrass. And you can also find that on that website I mentioned, and you may be able to find it somewhere else. It's less expensive, and sometimes what people do is they buy them both, and they blend them together, and usually the Sapina bluegrass ends up taking over over time. But those are the two grasses that do well in shady, wet spots. And if those won't grow, nothing will.
Cindy, does that help?
Sapina, and what was the other one again?
Rough bluegrass.
Okay.
Rough bluegrass.
I'll see what I can do. Thank you for your help.
Good luck.
Actually, 1,000 square feet in a city lawn, for example, that would cover quite a bit.
Yeah, but usually you're paying like $8 a pound.
Yeah.
$50 is like, wow.
Oh, man. 1-800-642-1234, our number. Give a call with your questions or comments. Herb in Boston, it's your turn next. Hi, Herb.
Good morning. Hey, I got another sand question maybe for you.
Okay.
We recently cleared off some woods, and I'm planting a few apple trees and expanding my garden. And I need some ground cover to cover a slopey area. It's going to get a lot of sun, looking about maybe an acre and a half. The bad thing is that the soil is acidic. It's about a 4.5 to 5.5 pH range.
Mm-hmm.
Wondering if you could recommend something where I don't have to lime the heck out of it and can get by with some good ground cover.
Yeah, good. The recommendation is going to be for the fine fescues that I talked about earlier in the show. These are chewings fescue, hard fescue, creeping red fescue, sheep's fescue. All these grasses were sort of native to areas with sandy soils and low pH. And they're not very aggressively growing, so it's not going to be something that's going to come and just absolutely thrive, but they will survive and they will cover the soil in those sandy, acidic areas. It will be difficult to get them established, though, again, especially on that sandy area.
Yeah, and then do well if people are running around or kids are out on it a lot?
Yeah, that's one of the drawbacks. They don't do well with traffic, but I sort of assumed, you cleared this area from forest, it's on a slope, you probably won't get too much traffic.
Yeah.
But good in full sun, it should be a good grass. So chewings fescue, hard fescue, and they often market these things as either no-mow or low-mow. Sometimes you see them as shady mix, but look at the seed label. So when I'm recommending these grasses, they're not going to be on big bold letters on the front of the bag. You're going to have to look for the seed label and look for those keywords for the species on it.
Herb, does that help out?
Very much. Thank you a lot.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Let's go to Mark in Hortonville next. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Yeah, so I have a lawn, and I had it put in professionally when I built my house 7 years ago.
Yep.
But the whole lawn has bumps all over it. Like, I mean, just like you can't see them, but when you walk barefoot, they're all over, and I don't know what they are, what causes them, or how to get rid of them.
Right. Yeah, that's pretty common for most lawns. They'll get that. It could be from just physical things like freezing and thawing, and you get kind of the soil buckles a little bit. It could be animals digging around. So there's nothing you can do to really prevent that from happening, but you can smooth them out with a roller. And I don't like to recommend this a lot of times, so it has to really annoy you before you take this advice, but you can rent or buy a roller that you can fill with water, and if you just roll over that thing, you load it up, it's got a lot of weight, that'll smooth out those bumps. You'll have to do it maybe every other year or so, but then keep in mind that you're compacting the lawn, and you may want to consider doing an aeration every fall or every other fall to sort of counteract that compaction that you're doing with that roller. But the roller should take care of little bumps.
Yeah, there you go, Mark. Thank you very much for calling. And we got Stephen Racine coming up next, but what about you? Question, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Dave Potratz, our engineer, Jane Rotunda, our on-air producer. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Talking today with Doug Soldat. He is a professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison, and he knows a whole lot about turf and irrigation and nutrient management. Questions for him, give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Stephen Racine, it's your turn. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I've got a neighbor that's got a black walnut tree that's right on the property line, a little bit over on his side, so I can't do anything about it. But I've got bare ground underneath it on my side of the yard. What can I plant there that will actually grow underneath a black walnut tree?
Yeah, that tree is notorious for excluding other species underneath it. It actually releases a chemical called jugulone that is basically an herbicide, and it prevents all kinds of things from growing. So I think your best bet is to try, we've been talking about fine fescues a lot. This is the fine fescue theme show, but fine fescues do well in shady areas and underneath trees in general, and they also produce their own class of kind of herbicides through the roots. So I can't guarantee that this is going to work, but if I were you, I'd find a grass that contains hard fescue or chewings fescue. And I think that's your best bet. And if that won't grow there, none of the grasses will.
There you go. Steve, do you get that?
Besides grasses that can grow there, though, such as like branches or something?
But so other than grasses?
Yeah.
Boy, so, you know, I focus so narrowly on grass that I'm not up to date with all the other potential landscape things that you could plant under there. I'm sure there are some, but I just don't have them at the tip of my tongue.
Yeah, there are, you know, things like myrtle. There are other ground plants that will do well there. I think in the learning store, online learning store, if you go there, I think there's a publication that talks about that very thing. So it's learningstore.uwex.edu, or if you just put in UW Learning Store, it's going to pop up. And I think you can find some more information on ground covers that do well in shady areas. And I don't have them all off the top of my head, so I'm going to shut up.
Yeah, yeah. And but those walnuts add that extra dimension of that.
Oh, yeah.
Chemical, which complicates things.
And I do know we have a list of plants that supposedly will live under black walnut trees on that UW Learning Store website.
Perfect.
So, there we go. Jill in Cross Plains, we'll go to you next. Hi, Jill.
Hi. My property was affected by the floods in August. I live right on a creek. And now every time the water rises with a good rainfall, we're losing a little bit more and more of the creek bank. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering if there's some kind of grass that I can plant there to hold the bank in place, or if that's just kind of a dream.
Well, right. So I'm not sure that a grass would be the optimal solution for minimizing erosion, but the grass that you could plant that's going to have the best at that will be tall fescue. So tall fescue is a vigorously growing grass. It does very well with no fertilizer. It has deep roots, which is what you want. You want a nice deep network of roots to hold the soil together. So if you're looking for a grass to minimize the erosion, I would absolutely go get tall fescue and plant that there. It should germinate pretty quickly, and the seeding rate you want to be on the higher end to help get complete coverage when erosion is the issue. But it should survive there perennially.
Yeah. Jill, does that help?
Yes, it does very much. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Jim in St. Croix Falls up next. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I just wanted to know if you could elaborate a little bit about this Lomo and Nomo.
Sure.
And also, could you repeat that seeds store that you mentioned earlier? It starts with seed.
Oh, yeah.
Online.
Sure, yep. Yeah, so one of the places I sometimes, if you can't find it in a local store, I usually check this website called seedsuperstore.com. And then one of the reasons I like it is they do rely on university trial research data for the grasses that they have in stock. They do a good job of talking about how the grasses are to be used, and they have a nice selection. They tend to be, you're going to pay more, but again, you're paying for that that specialty availability. Okay, so the no-mo, low-mo grasses. So when you're buying grass seed, oftentimes you're the big letters on the bag are some marketing term, like good for shady areas, good for sunny areas, contractor's mix. What you really want to do is flip the bag over or look on the fine print on the front where it tells you the species in the bag. And so low-mo, no-mo grasses tend to have species that are the fine fescues, the chewings, the hard, the creeping red fescue. Sometimes sheep's fescue. And so you don't want to trust the marketing materials, low-mo, no-mo. You want to look for at the label and make sure it's got a lot of chewings and a lot of hard fescue in it. And those grasses are low maintenance. They can be mowed every day or they can be mowed never. So they do well in a variety of situations, and we often recommend them, like you've heard today, for several different situations.
And if you don't mow, they kind of just flop over a little bit, don't
they? Yeah, they produce a nice seed head, and they kind of blow in the wind. If you watch golf on TV in some of those deep, rough areas, and you see these, you know, the grasses that are kind of wispy, that those tend to be fine fescues. And that sometimes they're also the grasses you see on the fairways that are really nice and short. So it's a really adaptable grass, and you can not mow it, or you can mow it just like a normal lawn.
Yeah. There you go, Jim.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And we will go to Lynn in Stevens Point next. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. I am calling because I have heard that lawns are really bad for the environment. Between the watering, the fertilizer, and the weed killers, that they're just not a good thing.
Yeah, I mean that's a this is one of the main focuses of my study. And the so the answer to your question, are lawns bad for the environment? The answer is no, they don't have to be. But yes, they can be if you mismanage them. So most lawns in Wisconsin don't require any irrigation to survive. So we recommend that you back off on that or don't use it at all. In terms of fertilizers, so we've found, interestingly, that some fertilizers actually can be better for the environment than none, because the fertilization makes the grass thicker, which slows down the water that's flowing across the lawn during a rainstorm and helps it soak in. Which is good for stormwater control. And then herbicides are, something that you can absolutely misuse, but, we try to teach people about the benefits of certain weeds like clover, and encouraging diversity in the lawn can be a good thing. So there's definitely ways that you can manage the lawn so it's a positive thing for the environment. And if you do things, on the other end, you can end up maybe causing some environmental harm. So there's, the answer depends on how you manage them.
Yeah. Lynn, does that help?
That does. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We have Todd in Delavan emailed, for the first time this spring, I noticed quite a bit of damage from voles over the winter. Anything I can do to prevent next year? I'm assuming for now I just reseed those areas?
Yeah, voles are tough. The meadow mice is another name for them. They kind of tunnel through your lawn, and they can congregate in areas and just chew up all the grass on the surface. Sometimes they don't kill the entire plant, and you might actually get some pretty good regrowth without having to reseed. But if you do these really large, dinner plate size, 2 feet in diameter size damage areas, you might want to reseed those. As far as minimizing the damage next year, they like to live near brush piles and wood piles and things like that. So if you can minimize those around your property, and you may see a decreased population. But they're really prolific. They have multiple generations per year, and if you have them, they can be a pretty big nuisance.
On to Ellen in Keewaskum. Hi, Ellen.
Hi there. I have a question about some soil I have access to. This spring, we are going to build some raised beds. And we live next or near an area where a pond has been dredged out because it was starting to fill up. So and near this pond is a big pile of soil or dirt that came out from the dredging. And I'm wondering what you thought about using this in my beds. It would save me a lot of money. That's one thing. But I'm also planning on making maybe the top half of this with a good soil mix.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a hard question to answer. One thing I would do is take a sample of it and send it into the Wisconsin State Soil Testing Lab and see what type of nutrients are in it, what the pH is, what the organic matter content is. And if that comes back looking decent, you may want to try to grow something in it, see if seeds will germinate. And if you can get success of that, then you could scale it up. I absolutely like your recommendation of blending it in with a compost or another topsoil. My guess is that this material doesn't have a lot of organic matter, which plants need and like. So have it tested. And if you don't have any red flags, maybe think about blending it in with some compost.
All right. There you go, Ellen. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. And Sharon in Green Lake County, it's your turn.
Well, good morning.
Morning.
My daughter was successful in growing wild blackberries under black walnuts, very mature black walnuts, within the city of Green Lake. And she knew she couldn't grow anything else under there, but wild blackberries worked just fine. And I just texted her at her work, just ask what it was. So if you're willing to have rambles, It was on the property line, so it wasn't in a play area or anything. But, yeah, and quite shady, very shady there.
And wild blackberries are pretty good eating, too.
Well, they are, if they, yeah.
And, you know, wild blackberries, they're growing in woods, you know, where it's shady.
Mm-hmm.
So they could survive. Yeah, why not? Sharon, thanks. Appreciate the call. Well, let's try Margo and Hancock next. Hi, Margo.
Hi. I am calling because I lived in Missouri for several years where fescues are the dominant grass in the area where I lived. And I also have horses, and some of them are broodmares. And I learned that fescue actually will cause broodmares to miscarry. So since you're talking about all these different varieties of fescues and how well they work on lawns, just as a caution that if those lawns are near horse pastures or if you ever planned on baling them for any reason, that could be toxic to broodmares. Fine for regular horses, but you don't want to feed it to pregnant mares.
All right, Margo, thank you very much.
Yeah, that's a good tip. And it's because these fescues can form relationships with endophytes, basically a fungus that lives inside the leaf. And in the lawn world, I'm glad Margo's raising the point of the dangers of when we're using it for animal feed, but it actually conveys insect resistance for the same reason. Insects don't like to eat it. So some of these grasses can have minimal impact or insect damage, but with horses and other animals that feed on it, we try to avoid that.
Yeah, good point, Margo.
Good point.
Thank you very much for that call. Well, Myra in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. I live out in the country and have a couple of ponds. I have Phragmite growing and starting to take over around the pond, which is okay, but now it's growing into my lawn, and I'm wondering, is there some type of grass that'll choke it out? And around the ponds, I also have muskrats who like to burrow in and ruin the edge of the pond. And I'm wondering, is there some type of fescue that I can plant to keep them out of the way or that they don't like?
You want to get rid of Phragmites for sure. The Department of Natural Resources, and here I'm jumping in here, but the Department of Natural Resources has on its website invasive plants, and one of them is Phragmites. And there are actually chemical controls, I believe, that you can do even on water to get rid of those plants. And you probably want to be rid of those plants no matter where they are in your pond and replacing them with other plants that will do a good job for you. But they're an invasive. And so if it was me, I'd go to the DNR's website and look up invasive plants, and Phragmites is going to appear, and you'll learn about ways to get rid of it. I don't think you could just plant other grasses and have it outcompete Phragmites.
Yeah, it's more of a wetland plant, and most of our grasses that we use for lawns do pretty poorly in wet conditions. I wouldn't expect them to be competitive.
So take a look at the DNR website, and you'll get a lot of good information about controlling an invasive like Phragmites. And thanks, Myra, for calling. Appreciate it. Jennifer in Wanakee, it's your turn. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Larry. It's a beautiful day out, but I just noticed that my green grass is yellow in spots from my big dog. Huh. And I was wondering what to do at this time of year to fix that.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Definitely one of our most popular questions, and that's because we haven't come up with a really good answer to this one yet. Dogs urine kills grass because it contains too high of a concentration of salt, and one of the main types of salt in dog urine is nitrogen, and so that's why you see these like green rings around the dead grass. So it's too much. It's similar as if you put too much nitrogen fertilizer down on your grass, you would actually kill it at a point. So what to do about it? You one thing that you could do is immediately dump a bucket of water right after where the dog peed, and that would dilute the salt out. Nobody can do that. That's no. too hard to stay on top of. You know, we've often heard people talk about, you know, home remedies of changing your dog's diet, which we absolutely don't recommend before talking to a vet about that. But I do know I've had two of the same breeds of dogs, and one would kill the lawn and the other one wouldn't. And we fed them the same thing. I have no idea. Maybe it's the amount of water they drink or something. But, you know, probably the best advice is to try to train the dog to pee in a non-grass area. Or if that's not possible, have a bucket, a 5-gallon bucket of topsoil, and then another bucket of seed, and then you just constantly, every weekend, you go out there and you kind of rake them up, and you put down the topsoil and you put some seed in it, and you step down it on your foot, and some of that will take, and you'll kind of stay on top of it that way.
Yeah, I like the idea of just training the dog to go to a corner of the yard and just have a little spot for him.
Yeah. That's probably the best long-term solution. I have an idea about a product. Like, if I could come up with something to fix this, I don't know how it would do it, but the product of the marketing would be called Urine Luck, right? So I'm just waiting for the idea, and then I'll be a millionaire. But no, it's a really common problem.
There you go, Jennifer. Thank you so much for calling. And on to Jane in Mineral Point. Your turn, Jane. Hi.
Hi, I wanted to respond to the person who called in about the black walnut tree bothering his grass. I have many black walnut trees in my yard, and I have certainly learned how to grow tomatoes and strawberries and this and that and the other thing. But under three very stately and beautiful black walnuts, I put a berm because I couldn't grow grass there. But the berm contains things like Solomon's seal and hosta and Siberian iris. And it's just lovely. Prairie dog, pagoda dogwoods will grow underneath black walnuts. Anyway, I've really studied this. And you can grow a lot of things underneath black walnut trees. Don't malign a tree. I had my trees now are trimmed, and they're beautiful, and they're majestic. So that's how I feel about black walnuts.
All right. There you go, Jane. Thank you so much for calling. Some good suggestions there, some good species there that do grow well under black walnuts. Appreciate it. And Jan in Viroqua has something for us. Hi, Jan.
Good morning, guys. Happy weekend.
To you as well.
Thank you. I have a lot of bare patches in my front and side lawn. Not from disease, but things like a stack of firewood that didn't get moved soon enough and the grass died out. I'd done some construction, so some things got dug up and other things got covered so long that they died. I am not picky about what I use. My criterion, it does get sun. My main criterion is what's going to be the easiest to get to take and fill in.
Yeah,
it doesn't have to match what's there. What matters to me is that the whole lawn is green. I don't care what is making it green.
Good. Yeah. I don't often recommend perennial ryegrass because it tends not to make a good long term permanent cover, but it'll form a cover really quickly, and it'll definitely persist for a few seasons. And over that few seasons, a Kentucky bluegrass will sort of fill in. So the best thing to patch with is perennial ryegrass. It should germinate in 4 or 5 days. It's very vigorous. It's nice and green, and it can survive. You know, it doesn't like super severe winters and super hot summers, but it'll do what you need it to do.
All right, there you go, Jan. Thank you very much for calling. And on to Don in Oshkosh next. Hi, Don.
Hi. I was wondering, the curb, part of it I put in new grass a couple years ago, but every year I have to put in it again. I think it's from all that salt from the road. Is there anything you can do about that?
Yeah, not really. Unfortunately, the amount of salt that usually gets deposited when you're next to a roadside is too high for any of our grasses to tolerate it. The best grasses at tolerating high salt are perennial ryegrass, which we just mentioned, and tall fescue. So you can when you're reseeding those areas, I would gravitate towards those two. But it's likely that next year we'll get if you get another flush of salt, it's going to be too high for the grass to survive. So it's kind of a constant battle. Perennial ryegrass and tall fescue are good species to put in the places where those areas have been damaged.
Yeah. There's between my sidewalk and the road, I've got some big blue stem. I've got some prairie type plants in there. Some of them are, and I don't have to mow it.
Right.
And they look great all summer. It's flowers. Some of them are flower plants. And if you go to a place like Prairie Nursery, there's other nurseries as well that specialize in those kinds of plants. You can find some that will work pretty well there and look good, and you don't have to mow.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they'll tolerate more salt.
Right.
So that's something to look into, Don. Thank you so much for calling. Allie in Appleton, your turn next.
In regards to the dog urine spots,
yeah.
There's actually a product that's on the market. It's called Dog Rocks. It's a rock that you would put in the dog's water bowl. Like what we do is we have like pitchers of water in our refrigerator that we like have the rock soaking in, and then use that to refill their water bowl. It'll change the pH content of the dog's urine output. So it's not going to be an instant result, but something long-term over the summer, if you, like, started it now, it takes about 6 to 8 weeks for it to metabolize in the dog's system. And you're going to see they're not going to be completely eliminated, but gone for the majority of that yellowing that you're going to see. And that works on our Great Dane and our Mastiff.
Is it, do you know the contents, or do they list any contents in the...
It's a naturally occurring rock. And I want to say, like, in some country, I don't have it in front of me to look at the product. But it's a naturally occurring in the mineral that will adjust the dog's pH content. We've been using it for the last two summers.
Oh, and it's you've seen some results.
Yeah, and the brand is called Dog Rocks.
Dog Rocks. Well, I'll be darned. Yep. Thanks, Allie. You wonder if, minerals, if it's saltier, it makes them drink more.
Yeah, I don't know. That's interesting. I haven't heard that before. I'll check that out after we get off the air here.
Yeah, Dog Rocks. All right. You rock, Allie. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. So does Doug Soldat. He rocks, too. He's a professor in the Department of Soil Science at the UW-Madison. He's going to be with us right through the program today to talk about spring lawn care. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your lawn here on the Ideas Network for this edition of Garden Talk, I'm Larry Mueller with Doug Soldat, professor in the Department of Soil Science at the UW-Madison. Open lines get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Jeff called in, couldn't stay online, but wonders, when's a good time to apply crabgrass control in southern Wisconsin?
Yeah, that's perfect, timely question, because the answer is right now. So this crabgrass will start to germinate when the soil temperatures get around 60, 65 degrees, and the optimal time to put down crabgrass pre-emergent products is when the soil temperatures are 50 to 55, which is about the time the forsythia are starting to bloom. And on my walk over to the studio today, I saw some forsythia starting to bloom. So the other cool thing is that there's a website called GDD Tracker, and the GDD stands for Growing Degree Days. And it shows you the whole upper Midwest. And if you click on crabgrass, it tells you when the optimal time to apply is. And if you go to that website, gddtracker.net, you'll see that we're right in the prime time for application.
What the heck is in crabgrass control?
So crabgrass control is a the conventional products are there's a couple herbicides that are basically cell division inhibitors that prevents the seed from dividing and growing into a plant. There is a corn gluten meal is sort of the organic or alternative approach to that, and corn gluten meal contains a chemical that also prevents seeds from germinating. So whether you go conventional or alternative, the timing is the same. You want to apply those things right now.
Terry and Roberts shot us an email. It says, I have some grass seed left over from last summer that I kept in a garage and is a mix from a big box store. Do you think it's still good?
Yeah, that's a good question. We usually like to plant grass within a year of when it was harvested, but certainly it can last longer depending on the storage conditions. What I would do, Terry, is wet a paper towel and then put like 20 to 30 seeds in that paper towel and then roll it up and stick it, near a window or something and just wait about a week and then unroll it. And you should start to see how many of those seeds have germinated. If it's about 80% of them, I'd say you're good. But if your germination is only, 50% or lower, I would say try to go get some fresh seed.
And if you're too cheap to want to do that, then you better put a heavier.
Yeah, then use the whole bag, right? And that's good advice too. If you put down twice as if its germination is only 50% of the seeds came up in that paper towel, then just put twice as much down as the bag recommends.
All right, there we go. And let's take another call here, James in Green Bay. It's your turn. Hi, James.
Hello. I hope I'm not already asking a question that's been covered. I was tuning in late, but my question is there any benefit to dethatching your lawn in spring? I see all my neighbors are doing it, and I've actually heard that you're tearing up some of the sprigs of grass, so it's not beneficial. And so I'd like your opinion on that versus aerating.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think I don't like dethatching at all. I think what people are doing more damage than good. They're actually creating, we just talked about crabgrass germinating right now. When you tear up the lawn like that, you're just providing opportunities for weeds like crabgrass to come in and invade. And so I say just leave it. What you may see is that the people who are dethatching, their lawn will appear a little bit greener or slightly faster than the people that don't, but they also probably have more weeds and they are doing more damage. So I say avoid that unless you're trying to get new seeds down yourself, and then focus on aeration in the fall. I think that removing that compaction a bit is a much better strategy than trying to dethatch things in the spring.
Yeah, you're right on there, James. Thank you very much for calling. I want to go back to crabgrass for just a minute because Marvin had emailed and wondered why crabgrass shows up later in summer. Why? Because it shows up later in summer. Why are we told to apply pre-emergence in early spring?
Yeah, no, and so that's the way that we're controlling it is your seeds in the ground, and before it starts to germinate is when you want to get it. And so, like I said, it'll start to germinate when the soil temperatures get up into the 60s. If you put down the pre-emergent herbicide after that seed has already started to emerge and grow, it's completely ineffective. So we target the time before the seed starts to germinate, which is right now. And then if you miss it, though, or if you don't do that, the crabgrass will start to show up in June and you'll notice it. But it's very difficult to control once it's already present.
Let's, and here we have some more information on dog rock. Someone said they're 100% natural Australian product, filter out impurities from water such as tin, ammonia, and nitrates. These are materials that are usually passed out through urine, and when the grass comes in contact with these elements, it results in urine burn on the grass, resulting in a dead yellow patch. I don't think it gets rid of nitrogen.
Yeah, the nitrogen is coming from the proteins that you're feeding the dog. It's a main component of the nutrients in the food. And so perhaps your water has elevated levels of nitrate, but I know certainly most places don't have high levels. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the product is, but I'm really interested to learn more. And I believe the testimonials, but I'm a scientist, so I'm skeptical. You know, I'm really excited to test it out.
Yeah, for sure. Karen in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Karen.
Hi, I'm calling because I have a recurring ant hill on my property. It's about a foot around. Every year I've tried to kill them, putting just hot water down the thing, down them, but then that burns the grass. And so I was wondering if there's any other solution.
Yeah, there is. One of the reasons you're not killing them is you're not getting down to the queen. And so what you need to do in one of those big mounds is to take a stake, something maybe a rod, let's say a rod that's about the, you know, maybe the size of a dime or a little less than that, smaller than that, and pound that right down into the hole, right down into the mound, and pound it down as far as you can. Because the queen is way down, is maybe a foot down. And if you then pound a few holes like that in the mound, you might be able to get rid of it with boiling water. Because what you need to do, if you kill the queen, then the rest are gone. There are some insecticides that you could use as well, but if you don't want to use insecticides, you can certainly try the boiling water. But the reason you're not getting it now is just by pouring on the top, it's just not getting deep enough to kill the queen. Karen, does that help?
Yes, but the boiling water won't kill the grass?
Well, it'll kill the grass, but if you've got an anthill there, it's going to
like the worst of things.
But if you're careful when you pour, you're not going to hurt too much of the grass for sure. And again, if you want to apply an insecticide with the water, there are some. You know, go to the garden center and ask about that, but you need to get down deeper to where the queen is. There you go. Let's go to Mary in La Crosse next. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have a question about old-fashioned white clover that we always used to have in our yards, you know, 50 years ago. I live in an apartment, but I have a nice area of grass out in front of my apartment, but it hasn't been well maintained. And I also have a patch real close to my patio where there's just no grass at all. And I was wondering if I could sprinkle some of that old-fashioned white clover seed into my little patch. But can I overseed it into the yard, like maybe before a rain or something? And would it catch without doing anything as far as loosening up the soil?
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought this up because we've been researching white clover lawns now for a while at our research station. And like you said, that used to be the only way we do it. Kentucky bluegrass and white clover make really good partners. And then, you know, we had World War II came along. We had inexpensive chemical fertilizers and herbicides that can control things. So we went away from it. But now it's coming back. It's big in Europe. And absolutely, you can have good success with white clover mixed with your lawn. The trouble is, like you said, how do you seed it? How do you execute that? And I do think that you're not going to have success if you just spread the white clover seed on top of your lawn, because there's already too much competition there. So what I would recommend is you rent a dethatching rake. So I told a previous caller, don't do it. But if you're trying to get seed to grow, that's a good way to do it. So just run a dethatching rake over your lawn and then spread the white clover seed. And I bet you'll get a pretty good good take from that, and it'll be a pretty uniform stand of white clover in your grass. But I do think you do need to do some soil disturbance.
Yeah, maybe right next to the patio, if it's just a little small patch, you could just take a garden rake and work that, you know, kind of run that back and forth and work it up a bit and then pour seed in there.
But I would mix it with grass. I wouldn't just do pure white clover if it's bare. I'd like to see the combination. Those two plants work really well together. But if you do one or the other, they have their drawbacks.
Yeah. Clover fixes nitrogen, doesn't it? Yeah.
Right. So and the Kentucky bluegrass needs nitrogen. So they're perfect.
Yeah. Perfect together. So there you go, Mary. Thanks. And Mary Lou, hi.
Yes, hello. I have got bare grass left over from a construction project, and it's in my backyard, which is very deep shade. Last year, I bought the commercial, you know, deep shade kind of grass. It came up in some spots, but didn't come up at all in the shadiest spot. I'm using a lot of hostas, but there's only so many hostas I can plant.
Yeah.
What's the best kind of grass I can get to fill in some of those totally bare patches?
It's probably the shadiest spots, too.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. Grasses are not well adapted to shade in general. The two that we talk about would be chewings or hard fescue, which probably was one of the grasses you planted in that shady mix. And then if it is a more wet soil, we've talked about rough bluegrass and Sapina bluegrass as being good options to try. But again, with deep shade, we like to encourage people to, you know, like you said, you have enough hostas, but maybe are there other more shade tolerant ground covers that you can plant? Because grass is just, it tends to be a struggle. You know, we talk about the light as being an issue, but some of it's the tree root competition. And so some of that grass that you germinate it didn't come up, might be, there's too much competition from the tree roots as well.
Yeah. So there you go, Mary Lou. And what were the two again that you...
Chewings fescue, hard fescue, or rough bluegrass and Sapina bluegrass.
There you go. Mary Lou, thank you so much for calling. Doug Soldat, our guest today. He is a professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison, PhD in horticulture, specializes in turf, urban soils, and nutrient management. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Doug Soldat, a professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison. He knows a whole lot about turf, nutrient management, water, soil testing, landscape irrigation. So questions for him, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Doug, Kathleen in Milwaukee's been waiting a bit, so let's go to her now. Kathleen, hi. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. Good afternoon. I have two questions. One is about dethatching lawns. I have compacted clay soil, and I'd like to dethatch my front lawn, but I have trees in my lawn or in my front yard. And so I'm wondering if dethatching would impact the trees, or do you need to be careful about that?
I wonder if she's means something other than dethatch.
Yeah, so you're talking about a machine that sort of has these vertical spinning knives on it that tears it up. Have you done this before?
No, and actually, I'm sorry, I meant aerating the lawn.
Ah, right, okay. Yeah, so aeration will poke these holes. No, it should be completely fine for the trees, unless you're like banging the aerator into the side of the trunk, which is a different issue. But no, that won't hurt at all. I would wait till fall though, because of the weed issue. So it's best to do the soil disturbances in the fall so that weeds don't take advantage of those new gaps that you create.
Mm-hmm.
Should be good for your trees.
Yeah, Kathleen, anything else?
Yes. Last year, with the weather, we had a lot of moisture and a lot of dewy mornings. And I think that I had dollar spot disease in one area of my front lawn. And I didn't do anything about it. And my question is, with the cold winter, would that have killed the dollar spot? Do I need to watch for that this year? Or do I need to treat it?
Yeah, so last year was one of the wettest, you know, most perfect seasons for diseases on lawns, and we saw a lot of weird stuff that we don't normally see. And so I'm going to chalk that up to, yeah, probably could have been dollar spot or it was dollar spot, but no, likely normal weather patterns, hopefully normal weather patterns resume, and you shouldn't see problems. And even if you do, probably still no action is required. It's just a cosmetic disease that will go away when the weather becomes more favorable.
All right. There you go, Kathleen. Thanks for calling. And Bill in Madison, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi. So if you put down a crabgrass pre-emergent, will that also prevent regular grass seed from germinating if you like were just filling in bare spots?
Yes, I'm glad you brought this up. I don't think we've mentioned this, but it absolutely will. So if you're going to use a pre-emergent, whether it be corn gluten meal on the organic side or the, you know, the traditional pendimethalin on the conventional side, they both will prevent the grass seed that you want to grow from growing. So do your seeding in the fall and prevent your crabgrass in the spring, two mm-hmm. separate timings.
And I guess if you had a big area, you could probably get yourself a couple of rolls of sod and put those in.
Yes, that's right. Yep, you can sod over that.
Yep, there you go, Bill. Thank you very much for calling. And Dorothy in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi there. How you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, last year I built a new house and they put in sod and I watered it in the fall, and it sounds like maybe similar to the call you just had. My whole sod, everything is pretty yellow. Everybody else's grass is greening up, and that brand new sod looks terrible. Is there anything I can do?
That's a tricky one to know for sure what's going on. Sometimes different grass varieties will green up at different rates, and it might be that the sod that you put in was just a slightly different variety, and it will pick up. Another possibility is that it had some winter damage because it was not completely mature last year. So my advice is just let's wait this out, and hopefully by midsummer things are looking good and it won't occur next year. But I'm not exactly sure what else the problem could be with it.
Yeah, unless what did you lay the sod over? Was it all rocky or was it?
No, it was topsoil. The people that built the house put the sod in, and you're right, it was put in late fall.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards it's probably just a slightly different variety. If I went out to my research station right now, we would look at all the different bluegrasses, and some of them would be yellow and some would be dark green. And those seeds the sod growers are using change year to year, and it could just be that that particular sod just greens up a couple weeks later than your normal grass.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So it might come around.
All right. Thanks, Dorothy. Appreciate it.
Good luck.
And on to Mike in Racine. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Larry. How are you doing?
Good. Appreciate your call.
Yeah, I've got, I got white clover and some black medic, and my wife is a little, she doesn't like the white clover, even though I know you guys have been saying it's not a bad thing to have, but it seems to be kind of overtaking some areas. I do in the past use kind of spot spray with like a Weed Be Gone type of herbicide, and it seems like I just can't knock it down. Do you have any suggestions?
Other than what you're doing, I'd suggest that spot spray should be able to knock it down. Maybe the timing, you could try that timing in the late fall. They tend to be more effective. Another product that you could try would be a product that contains iron, HEDTA. And that's a similar, it's a kind of an alternative herbicide that will not completely eliminate, but should knock back clover a bit. In terms of how you manage it, I can't think of how changes would favor the grass over the clover. So I think maybe what you're doing is right, but maybe shift your timing to focus more on the fall.
There you go. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it. And Ron in La Crosse is up next. Hi, Ron.
Yeah, I got a question. I didn't seed in the fall, but as far, and I do have a bag of corn gluten as a pre-emergent, and then you mentioned something, that chemical synthetic pre-emergent, and I have another question I want to follow up with. But since I didn't seed in the fall, how long does it take for those effects of those pre-emergents to wear off if you want to seed in the spring?
Yeah, that's a good question. Usually on the bags, they'll say specifically when it is okay to seed. So it may vary from company to company, bag to bag. But in general, 6 to 8 weeks is a pretty typical window for how long you have to wait until you can seed again.
So here we are at the end of April, and if you wait 2 months, you're into the end of June.
which is not a really good time to put it down.
Basically,
you know, basically you just want to think about your seeding as two seasons. You can do it in the spring, and then you can do it again in the fall. So if you do use a pre-emergent in the spring, you're just going to have to wait probably until end of August, early September to do your seeding. Because pre-emergent does whack it back for a couple months.
Yeah, there you go, Ron. Thanks for calling. And we have open lines. Get you on pretty quickly here at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. We'll get you on almost right away. Lois and DeForest, we go to you. Hi, Lois.
Good morning. Thank you very much. I'm concerned about pollinators and the bees, but I'm wondering, will the crabgrass preventer that you're talking about, will that be a problem for bees and pollinators?
That's a good question. As far as I know, pendimethalin, which is the most common active ingredient in crabgrass preventers, so there's also a couple others, but has not been implicated in the studies looking at bee decline. So my hesitant answer here is no. I do not believe that the crabgrass preventer will have any impact on the bees. But anytime you are investigating the impact of chemicals and herbicides, things are complicated. They're difficult things to study. But I have not heard of that being an issue.
All right. Thank you, Lois, for calling. Well, I've been watching on television. Occasionally, I see an ad for a robotic lawnmower, and it looks great. what do you think?
Actually, my first robotic mower showed up in the office today. We're evaluating three of them, three different brands that you can buy. You know, the prices range anywhere from $500 to $2,000. And so, you know, we're really excited to see how these things perform with obstacles and slopes and quality of cut. But I'm intrigued by them. I think they're pretty interesting. No gas.
You wonder. I guess they have to. Don't they have to be kind of trained to stay in your lawn?
Yeah, it seems like the way most of them do it now is you lay down a wire. And so it kind of stays. It walks randomly in between this wire, and it's always cutting. And then when the battery goes low, it finds its way back to its charging station. And when it's charged, it comes back out and mows again. So it's a different process, but you know it's quiet. Less pollution.
Yeah.
See, if they work, I think that you're going to see these take off.
Well, I saw, while you were mentioning the wire, I thought back to a show I used to do called Calling All Pets, and somebody once called and they had a shock collars for their dog, and they had to run a wire around the lawn, and then the shock collar, it would beep once you got close to that electric wire that
right.
was buried. And the dog got shocked once. You know, he started walking through it, walking toward the end of the toward the wire, and the collar beeps to let the dog know that you're getting close.
Right.
So he got nailed a couple times, and then the next time the dog walked up to where it started beeping, the shock collar started beeping, and then it just sat down. And it waited for the battery to die, and then it ran across.
Oh, smart dog, yeah.
Oh, man. Well,
that's
a little
hilarious.
Levity here. Owen and Wyawega, it's your turn. Hi, Owen.
Yeah. Hi, Larry. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Got some pasture down the road here. They had been using it for horses for quite some time. I don't think they've done much to it as far as fertilizer or any type of aeration or anything like that. And I'm looking to see what I could do to put some beef calves out there. I'd like to interseed, or if I could avoid having to retill it all and reseed it all, I'd like to try to find a decent grass to use for beef calves. I would do rotational pasturing there. I wouldn't do it where they had full use of the pasture throughout the season.
Yeah. Okay.
I thought the stocking density pretty low.
Yeah, so unfortunately, I have no info on what the best grasses are for feed, like you're talking about. But I mean, I would assume that they I know they make tractor-mounted interseeders that I think would work great. You could slit seed in a couple different directions and get that growing. But I don't know. I'm not comfortable giving you recommendations for what grasses will make the most sense for that use.
Yeah, where would we go for that? UW Agronomy?
Yeah. Maybe Dan Undersander, somebody.
If you go to the department, University of Wisconsin Department of Agronomy, and there'll be a listing of names, and Dan Undersander is probably the one to talk to, or at least email, and he would probably have some good advice for you, and you can do that all online, and probably he's pretty quick to answer questions, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So UW-Madison Department of Agronomy, Dan Undersander, would if he doesn't know, he'd tell you who to he'd find out for you or tell you who else to get a hold of for sure. Well, let's go to Jay and Two Rivers next. Hi, Jay.
Hello. Thanks for your help. Say our climate here. We stick out in the lake, and it's kind of a microclimate. We tend to get a lot of cool wet weather, which gets the grass going pretty good up until, say, the end of June, and then we've got a couple months of real dry, hot weather, and the grass that has no shade tends to get pretty stressed, and even if I give it an inch of water every week, it still will sometimes turn yellow in areas. And I'm wondering if it's okay to use 10-10-10 garden fertilizer with the phosphorus to stimulate the root growth. Of course, applied carefully so that it doesn't get into the street. But have you any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend that. I think first, the state of Wisconsin would prohibit that application unless you have a soil test that shows that you have a need for that phosphorus. So you may be right. It may be deficient in phosphorus, but you want to send in a soil sample and get the lab report on that. And then if the lab report does recommend adding phosphorus, then you could go ahead and use a fertilizer like a 10-10-10. But in my experience, most of the soils, even the ones that haven't been fertilized with phosphorus in a very long time, have a lot of phosphorus, more than grasses need. So the root, it may be a rooting issue, but I'm not convinced that phosphorus is the solution to it. So my recommendation is send in a soil sample, see what it says, and then if not, use a phosphorus-free fertilizer.
All right. There you go, Jay. Thank you. And on to Rich in Belleville. Hi, Rich.
Yeah, I had some lawn that was damaged last year by the flooding in August, and it just stayed wet all fall and just not coming in very thick, and wanted to kind of overseed it. Just wondering when the best time that would be and kind of how to do that.
Yeah, I don't expect the lawns to be coming in thick from fall seedings, and especially with this winter and the spring, I think everything is kind of just slow. So you may have some better success or better results midsummer. But if you want to supplement that, now is still probably even a little too early because again the seeds need that temperature to start going. I would wait a couple more weeks, and then for small areas you can rake them up. Loosen the soil somehow. The best way to do it for a large area would be to use a dethatching rake that would create little lines in the soil that you can put the seed in and then rake over and step it down. But having good seed-to-soil contact is absolutely critical for getting overseeding to work. But, if I were you, I'd probably wait it out, fertilize it around Memorial Day, maybe again around 4th of July, and then if it's still looking weak by Labor Day, then you could try the overseeding. But I wouldn't be surprised if that grass starts to fill in over the summer.
All right. There you go, Rich. Thanks for calling. And Janet in Sparta, your turn.
We feed a lot of birds all winter in our side yard, and thousands of birds, I'm talking.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of bird droppings that have killed off, like burning bushes and lilac bushes, and seems to be affecting our pine tree in that area. And I'm just wondering if there's anything I can do to continue feeding the birds, but to treat the lawn afterwards.
You're looking at some heavy, probably more nitrogen.
Can we do? Is there bird rocks? We can.
Man, oh man! Yeah, have you got that many birds coming in?
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's similar to the dog urine issue that we talked about earlier in the show. You know, you just have an overabundance of nutrients and a small concentration, and likely there's not much you can do other than try to decrease the density of those droppings.
Yeah, you could.
Okay.
You could probably, you know, you might be able to water it through,
spray it off,
really, because kind of soak it down.
Yeah, I'd give that a try.
That's about the only thing I can think of.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's worth a try anyway, Janet. Otherwise, don't feed so many birds. That's the other solution there. Thanks for calling. Megan and Dousman, your turn. Hi, Megan.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We have some low spots in our yard that stay really wet, and to the point where grass isn't growing there at all anymore. It's pretty much bare. We've tried seeding it twice the past two springs. It's also a very shady spot. So I was looking for maybe a recommendation of like a native Wisconsin ground cover I could put there. It's a country yard, so we're not looking for anything beautifully manicured. I just want the dogs to come in without muddy paws, basically.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, again, I'm sort of the wrong character for the native plants. I mostly study the grasses, so I could give you a recommendation on the grasses that you could try, and that, again, would be rough bluegrass or Sapina bluegrass, which you probably haven't tried yet, that would do best in that situation. But in terms of the native Wisconsin native ground covers that do well, I just don't have them on the tip of my tongue here.
And, again, you could find those if you go to the UW Extension Learning Store. Online, UW Learning Store. Learning Store at uwex.edu. That's the official title. There's, I know, publications on ground covers, and you'll get some good advice from there for sure on ground covers. But otherwise, the grass again, the two grass, Sapina
bluegrass and rough bluegrass.
All right.
Yep.
And, Ken wants to know how to get rid of Creeping Charlie.
Yeah, it's a difficult issue, and it's related to what we're talking about with Megan here, is that in shady areas, grasses just don't do well. And Creeping Charlie or ground ivy is made for that situation. So oftentimes it's think about the ecology. If you're fighting an uphill battle if you think you want to get rid of it. That said, the best chemical control method that we have is a product that would contain triclopyr. So triclopyr is a relatively low toxicity herbicide that is good at eliminating Creeping Charlie. But in shady environments, it's going to continue coming back.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, Creeping Charlie, it's good for the bees, and it's the first thing to flower in the spring.
It smells nice when you mow it.
Smells nice when you mow it. I'm just leaving it in my lawn. I tried to get rid of it once, a couple of times.
You can't beat it, join it.
Yeah. I tell you what, Doug, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming by. We'll look forward to your next visit.
Glad to be here, Larry.
Doug Soldat, professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison. Always great to have him come by, and he'll be back again next week. Liz Freemuth joins us for Garden Talk to talk spring gardening questions and answer them for you. And Monday at 11, the author of a children's book about the circus. Stay with us in the meantime. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.